Bienvenidos a Crónicas de la Raza. Welcome to La Raza Chronicles. On today's program, we want to honor Fidel Castro's birthday. In doing so, Nina interviews John Curl about the international co-op movement and focuses specifically on the movement in Cuba. We also bring you music from Bobby Cespedes, Cuban Cowboys, and John Santos to honor Fidel Castro and the revolution. And last, we come back to California, where Gary Baca interviews poet Matt Cedillo. All this and much more. Stay tuned.
This is Nina Serrano for La Raza Chronicles. I have in the studio John Curl. John Curl has just returned from Cuba, where he gave a presentation about the co-op movement to an international cooperative movement conference in Havana. He read his paper and made the presentation on the co-op movement in Yugoslavia because he felt that would somehow be an aid to the Cuban revolution in this unusual state that it's in right now. Now, John is not just an expert on the co-op movement. He's written a novel about the co-op movement, and he's been a leader in that movement for several decades. But he also has written about Cuba. He's a poet, and he wrote a book called Yoga Sutras of Fidel Castro. And it is a most marvelous book, and you can get it on Amazon.com. He also wrote a play about Cuba and the whole Antilles, Columbus, and the Bay of Pigs. He's a very multi-talented person, so his insight on what's going on in the co-op movement in Cuba was something very interesting to us at La Raza Chronicles. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Nina.
Well, John Curl, tell us about what attracted you to this conference in Cuba, when the conference took place, and what your presentation was about.
Well, the title of the conference was called Cooperativism in Cuba, or El Cooperativismo in Cuba. And it was sponsored by the University of Havana, the Cuban Institute of Philosophy, and the Center for Global Justice, which is an organization based in Mexico. And the Cuban Institute of Philosophy is not about Plato, it's about social philosophy. And I first heard about this. I belong to this cooperative organization in the Bay Area called NOBOS, the Network of Bay Area Cooperative Worker Cooperatives. We received an invitation to be part of a delegation that was going to this conference. It took place in Cuba last month, June 19th to July 2nd, 2016, for 2 weeks. And it became a 28-person multinational delegation. And the conference was about re-envisioning and restructuring the Cuban economy. Besides the United States, there were people in our delegation from Canada, India, China, Germany, and Mexico. I don't know if you would know any of these other people who went, but there's here academics and activists in the co-op movement. Among them were Jessica Gordon Nempard, Ajwa Ifateo, Cliff Durand, Al Campbell, Christina Clamp, Gabriela Herbert, many, many other people, and some of the people from the University of Havana, the Instituto de Filosofía included Camila Pinheiro Arnecker, Olga Fernandez, Roberto Lima, Beatriz Diaz. A very large number of the people in Cuba who are involved with re-envisioning Cuban economy.
So where do you feel the co-op movement fits into the global picture at this moment in world history?
Well, I think it fits in a really center stage in that we've got an international system which is totally dysfunctional, which is geared towards taking the wealth of the world, privatizing it, channeling it into the hands of a tiny elite, and the combination of that with technology, which has made most work obsolete. There are fewer and fewer jobs, many, many more marginalized people. The world's population is continuing to expand. Climate change is making it difficult for sustainable economies that have been there for hundreds, if not thousands of years to continue. So we're in a time of great social change, and the world economic system has no way of dealing with this. And so people are thrown back on their own resources, and that really is where the cooperative movement comes in worldwide. And the United Nations has recognized this. The United Nations actually has asked every country in the world to get together with their cooperative movement to try to work on ways to create a sustainable economies where people are.
And that seems to be happening in Cuba also, but coming from the other perspective, which is a non-capitalist perspective, that they moving into the co-op movement from out of the communal or state-owned workforce.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what is happening. The old Soviet-style socialism for Cuba no longer works. It worked until the end of the 1980s.
Or the end of the Soviet support.
Until the end of the Soviet support. Then they went through a very disastrous period that they call the special period. You know, they could not continue going on the way they were, and there were many, many other factors involved. Their economy was geared towards kind of a monocrop agriculture.
Sugar and rum.
Yeah, sugar and rum, some tobacco and some citrus, but no longer had trading partners, and they had not developed a sustainable economy internally. And you combine that with the extreme bureaucratization of the government and of the economy, and it resulted in a population where civil society, as we know it, really barely existed anymore, and people had kind of gotten used to this command economy and stopped being able to kind of take the initiative. And so this kind of fell apart at a certain point that they needed to change things very deeply, and yet they didn't want to give up socialism. They started investigating a deeper form of socialism, which had one version had originally been tried in Yugoslavia, called self-managed socialism.
Now that brings us to the paper that you delivered at this conference, Co-op Movement in Yugoslavia.
Because it was really the only attempt that I know of, and that I think the only attempt that really has ever been done, is to create a whole system, a whole social system in a country based on a cooperative economy. Many groups have dreamed of doing that, but in Yugoslavia they actually had the ability to do it. They gained that ability, you know, unlike the rest of Eastern Europe. They defeated the Nazis by themselves. The Nazis were there, and they got rid of them. They didn't need the Red Army. Most of Eastern Europe got the Axis, was pushed out of the rest of Eastern Europe by the Red Army from the Soviet Union. But in Yugoslavia, they did it themselves, so they could do whatever they wanted there.
So you chose to study that. Did you choose to study that with the intention of bringing it to the attention of Cuba?
No, I have been studying this for years and reading some of the theoreticians of Yugoslavian self-managed socialism, what they called market socialism also. You know, so in any case, when this came up, I had been meaning upon writing about it for quite a long time. And I just took this opportunity when I understood that Cuba was going into a very similar kind of social experiment. I went a little deeper into it to understand that there were not too many people who had a very clear idea of what had happened. They knew that there had been some kind of a cooperative organizations there, and then that was destroyed by the Civil War and all these horrible ethnic cleansings that took place. But people really didn't have a clear idea of what had happened. And also a lot of the literature was in Serbo-Croatian. You know, they were not able to read it. So I kind of delved into it, and I came up to some understandings of their accomplishments and their problems and also how they were destroyed.
So there no longer is a Yugoslavia, of course, and there are very relatively few speakers of Serbo-Croatian. So how was your presentation received? How did the Cubans especially receive it?
I was very fortunate. One of the people there, a woman from Germany named Gabriela Herbert, who is literally one of the world's experts in Yugoslavia and spent a lot of time there and knew many of the theoreticians. She completely backed up my narrative and added some things to it, even though it was on a subject that really not a lot of people knew a lot about. Fortunately, I immediately got this affirmation.
Well, know that your presentation was a 10-page paper, so do you think you could give us a summary of what it is that you presented?
Sure. Yugoslavia had been like a peasant country, and in order to industrialize, they had to basically convince people who had been farmers to become industrial workers. And the old Soviet model didn't work. They tried that for a couple of years, and it simply didn't work. So they just invented their own model, which was based upon workplace democracy. In all of what we would consider small business here in Yugoslavia, those were run by the collectives or the cooperatives of the workers there. And it was a whole, it was a fairly complex system, coordination. They had centralized planning, socialist planning from the central government to promote social justice. And it worked really well for a while. The big problem with Yugoslavian self-management was that the whole country had been kind of cobbled together fairly recently from the, all these little countries, each of one of which had their own nationalism and their own regionalism. So it was extremely difficult to break through that regionalism. Eventually, it was the regionalism that kind of broke the whole thing down and destroyed it.
And what is your impression of what is going on in Cuba now? How big is the present co-op movement there?
Well, right now it's in an experimental stage. This is, so to speak, it's like a pilot program, which was started in 2011 to 2012. They have approximately 500 worker cooperatives were authorized, and there are almost 400 in operation today with about 15,000 members, which is fairly small. Cuba has a population of 11 million people. But the idea was that the government both no longer wanted to or could really afford to run small businesses. So the concept is for the government to step out entirely out of everything that we would consider small businesses and give them over to the workers involved. And so now, depending on the success, it's complicated because it's not that easy for groups of workers to really run a small business, and people have no experience or very little experience in a market economy there. So they're trying to make it work. And if they do make it work, if they do make these pilot programs work, then I think the whole economy of what we would call small business is going to become very similar to what they had in Yugoslavia, kind of a self-managed worker cooperative economy.
So are you going to be staying in touch with this Cuban co-op movement?
Definitely. You know, in fact, all the people of our group have been staying in touch. That we're in touch with the people there. And so they also want to develop ties between the co-op movement in Cuba and the co-op movement in the United States. Because this is really an international movement, cooperatives.
Can you talk a little bit about the co-op movement right here in the United States and maybe highlighting the Bay Area?
Well, the Bay Area is really the most highly developed sector of the United States in terms of worker cooperatives. There's about 40 some odd worker cooperatives in the Bay Area. Most are in the East Bay, but there are quite a few in San Francisco and scattered around the Bay Area. This has been going on. The Bay Area is a center for this for really decades. In the United States, we also have an organization called the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives, which is connected to an international organization called the International Cooperative Alliance, and that's connected to the United Nations. So, you know, it really is kind of a worldwide movement. So, you know, it's primarily, I would say, the center of it are people who would otherwise be marginalized. We're talking kind of on a worldwide basis. You know, people creating their own jobs, getting together with other people, and also having the values of democracy in the workplace. And that's kind of a whole other level of it, is being a movement to democratize work.
Well, when I first came to the Bay Area, I can remember shopping in the Berkeley Co-op. It was a big, big grocery store with its own parking lot, even with its own brands, even with its own newspaper. So the Bay Area, yes, has been part of that movement for a long time. And also more recently, I can remember the opening of Arizmendi's on Grand Avenue in Oakland, still a favorite. And of course, the Cheese Board in Berkeley, another co-op. And what do you see as the possibilities for the future of this here in the Bay Area? And how can people here support the co-op movement in Cuba?
Well, the cult movement in Cuba right now does not have what are called second-tier cooperatives, although there is the infrastructure for making that happen. Second-tier cooperatives are like a cooperatives among cooperatives. No Boss, the Network of Bay Area Worker Cooperatives, and the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives are second-tier cooperatives, cooperatives that are integrating, that are doing things that individual cooperatives really can't do, and are also part of what we call the solidarity economy. All of it put together is building an alternative economy for people that the official economy here just is not able and not interested in taking care of.
So what are the links or the possibilities of solidarity with the co-op movement in Cuba?
Well, that's a big one. It's, right now, it's just on the level of desires. The co-op movement in Cuba and the people, the theoreticians behind it. We met quite a few. We did a tour of cooperatives in Cuba, and we went to like maybe about 10 different cooperatives and met a lot of the people there.
What were some of the fields?
Well, there was a shirt factory, a shirt manufacturing cooperative. There was a construction cooperative. There were a number of restaurants. There were an accounting cooperative. Now, that was very important. The taxi and bus cooperative, a furniture factory. The accounting cooperative is trying to fill the space of that, you know, as I mentioned before, working people in general really don't know business practices. I think they're trying to expand into consulting also. They need this whole backup infrastructure, and cooperatives themselves are trying to create that. And I think that's part of what the connection that we're trying to make between Cuban cooperatives and our organizations here. But like I said, they don't have this second level. When they do develop second level cooperatives, then, you know, we can really connect with it. And actually, one of the people delegation, a woman named Christina Clamp, is connected with the International Cooperative Alliance and started working with the people in Cuba to try to get them connected with it. The International Cooperative Alliance is really kind of the central international organization among cooperatives. And today, Cuba is not involved with it. But that's kind of maybe that's the first step is that Cuba really needs to get a second tier cooperative organization that can get connected with them, the International Cooperative Alliance, and they can get. I'm actually kind of trying to connect them. Some of the people that I met at the University of Havana with No Boss. We're starting from scratch here. This is kind of a country which doesn't have much of what we call a civil society, and cooperatives are part of civil society.
Well, I like that slogan, No Boss. I think maybe many KPFA listeners can relate to that concept of No Boss. It's wonderful to be in control of your own life, or at least have a voice in it.
Yes, that's been one of the main motivating factors for myself to get why I got involved with cooperatives and the cooperative movement. I was never a very good employee, and I hated it. I hated being an employee. Cooperatives are not for everybody because some people just don't have a personality, a social personality. You have to really, have to be the kind of person who likes to interact in a democratic way with other people.
So, John, how can listeners get in touch with you to learn more about all this?
Well, they can go through No Boss, which is a website.
Is that noboss.org?
It's www.nobos.org. A-W-C.
Wait a minute. B-A-W-C? Oh, Boss.
Get it. No Boss. It's the Network of Bay Area Worker Cooperatives. The Network of Bay Area Worker Cooperatives. N-O-B-A-W-C.
.org.
And I am the editor of the No Boss, it's pronounced No Boss, of the No Boss newsletter. And you can get in touch with me at newsletter at noboss.org.
Also, if you want to see any of John Curl's artistic work, read his plays, his poetry, his essays, you can go to amazon.com and look up John Curl.
I also have a website, johncurl.net. You can find me there. You can get in touch with me through that website also.
John. johncurl.net, and that's C-U-R-L.
J-O-H-N-C-U-R-L.net.
Well, thank you so much. Muchas gracias, John Curl.
Baba. Mi padre aquí le traigo un tema muy bonito para usted. Un tema que me sale del alma. Sagrado.